Welcome to Modern Practice, where we cover the issues that impact your clinical leadership and how you deliver care on the front lines. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva. Now, on this episode, we welcome Dr. David Levine to discuss the concepts of meaningful data and how that data becomes a mechanism to engage physicians and clinicians and drive change to their practices. David, first of all, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here, Tom.
So tell us a little bit about your background and your current role here at Vizient.
Great, Tom. I'm currently the Group Senior Vice President of Advanced Analytics and Product Strategy and Management at Vizient. What this means is I oversee our Center for Advanced Analytics, which works directly with clinicians, mainly chief quality officers, chief medical officers, in understanding their data, as well as working with a lot of our internal teams, including our advisory solutions team and performance improvement teams, in helping to deliver data to help drive change. I've been with the company, Tom, for 10 years. I'm an emergency medicine physician. I spent 15 years in the trenches at Cook County Hospital, Stroger Hospital in Chicago. First as just emergency medicine physician, seeing patients on a daily basis, and fell into quality during my tenure there and wound up being the medical director of the emergency department there for my final 7.5 of the 15 years.
Thank you, David. And we're glad to have you on board. So you hear the phrase continuously, you can't fix what you can't measure. And I get it, particularly as a clinician leader, I totally get it. But I sometimes have the issue with trusting the data, specifically having meaningful data. So what do you mean when we speak about meaningful data?
Yeah, Tom, that's a really important question. And I think there's a couple elements to meaningful data. The first concept, just because you can measure it doesn't mean that it's important or it's something that you should do something about. So I think the first element of meaningful data is that piece of data measuring something that is important around the patient's outcomes and can do something about what you're measuring to improve that care. I think other elements that are really important about meaningful data is how the physician can relate to the data, meaning that one needs to know who is this data being compared to. Is it the same type of patient that my outcome is being measured to versus someone else's outcome? And really, the more that can be transparent, the more important that is. So if I'm an academic medical center clinician, as an example, one can say you're comparing me to other academic medical physicians, but yet my next question is going to be who exactly or what institutions are in that group, because not even all academic medical centers are created the same. I think the other big piece that physicians legitimately have a lot of concerns about is the attribution. Was I, as a clinician, with that piece of data that I was given, even part of that care and really making sure that it's curated, that they're my patients and my performance?
So you bring up two very good points. Number one is about transparency, which is something we've learned specifically recently with the pandemic of the importance of leadership transparency. But then attribution, which is an area that we've all been struggling with. For instance, my background as a hospitalist, if my care, did the attribution of the specialist have anything to do with my data itself?
Yeah, you're right. And I think an important piece with the data is never going to be perfect, but is it good enough to drive change? And I think it's really important to make sure that we don't let perfect stymie us and stop us from making change. And really, the data should be used to improve the delivery of our healthcare. And we should look at that at that context first versus physician one versus physician two's performance overall. And is one doc better than the other? How are we improving care overall for those patients? Attribution is a tough one, because really medicine is more and more a team sport. And I think the key is to really look at if you had some significant part in the care of that patient and or some sort of input in the care plans overall on a high level, that that's an important piece for that attribution.
Okay. So can you give us some examples?
I think if you take, Tom, like with your example of like being a hospitalist, as you know, hospitalists, of course, it's usually more than one hospitalist is taking care of that patient, that a metric of a patient's outcome around length of stay or mortality really could be attributed to more than one doc. Even if you took care of that patient for 1/3 of the visit, that attribution, it would be important to not only go to you, but to your other colleagues. And you both look at that as a team sport and how you as a group of hospitalists take care of that patient. Attribution is obviously easiest in the procedural areas, at least on the immediate outcomes of a procedure as far as complications and outcomes, when we especially look at that principal procedure physician. But yet, even with someone that has a procedure, oftentimes that patient is then taken care of by the hospitalists and the care team with the consultation of the proceduralist later in the care. And again, both groups should be looked at as part of that attribution of that outcome.
So are there any insights from the data in reference to the pandemic?
You know, we've seen a lot of interesting information from the pandemic. The biggest pieces that we've seen, and not surprising because we all heard it and we lived it, is really the significant decreases in a lot of our routine care, our emergency department care, our quote unquote normal population that happened, especially in the peak of the pandemic, as hospitals were either in hotspots dealing completely with patients related to the pandemic or pretty much locked down in preparation for a potential onslaught of patients and with the need to preserve personal protective equipment and ventilators and whatnot. What we've seen as the months have gone on with the pandemic is we're beginning to see a bounce back in some of those numbers. So emergency department volume is still down, but it is rebounding up to its normal level. It's at about 80% of where it was before. We had initially during the pandemic seen a higher acuity set of patients that were coming in. We're starting to see more of that quote unquote normal mix of patients coming into the ED from the most acute to some of the more minor ED visits as an example. We saw a huge drop, almost a shutdown of elective procedures. That again, we're starting to see that rebound. We're not back up to baseline by any means yet. It seems that certain procedures that patients might perceive as less acute or the most elective, such as some of the orthopedic procedures, are a little slower to come back than some of the procedures in some of the other specialty areas. We have seen, you know, definite shifts in trends as the literature has evolved around pharmaceuticals and which pharmaceuticals were being used early in the pandemic. Hydroxychloroquine had high utilization, has now gone down to almost not being used. As we learned more about effective treatments for COVID, we've seen a rise and the continued rise in the use of dexamethasone, for example. Probably one of the most interesting things I've seen in the data as well is the real huge uptick in the use of telemedicine, telehealth during the beginnings of the pandemic, people being really able to turn on and use the technology in a robust way. A little concerning or troubling is we're starting to see almost a return to pre-pandemic use of telemedicine. And I would have hoped or expected that obviously we wouldn't have kept at the full peak, but we're really almost back down to where we were pre-pandemic. And it's a little troubling that we haven't taken advantage of some of those learnings and used an excellent modality as another alternative of care for patients.
That brings up a very, very good point. So I understand the importance of getting the data, but we're actually in a time of austerity for many of our members. And I believe this time of austerity is probably going to be for the next few years. So is using or getting this data require a major investment?
I would say, Tom, that it doesn't take a major investment, but it does take a major commitment. And I think even in times of austerity, I think it's just a key of making sure that you use the data in your high priority areas. And so you're really looking at areas like clinical variation, and especially in high cost areas where there might be clinical variation and opportunity to really make sure that people are following clinically research and vetted protocols. One's looking at some of your high use pharmaceuticals and or devices. I think using the data, it does take resource and commitment. It doesn't take a village, but it does take a continual use of the data and the sharing of the data. And I think probably one of the things, even in the time of the pandemic where resources were really pulled in a lot of different directions, and you started at the beginning of this talk with me talking about some of the transparency of leadership with hospital staff during the early days of the pandemic really helped in the delivery of care. And so continuing that transparency of that data and sharing that data is an important part of that commitment.
So clinical variation, you bring up a very good point. So one thing that we've learned specifically in the northern states or in the earlier part of the pandemic was that high cost and even complications occur from a lack of clinical standardization. Well, this might be a great way of engaging physicians to decrease that variation. So can you tell us how we can use the data to engage our colleagues?
Yeah, I think the key, whether in a pandemic or not in a pandemic, of where we really score on using this data to improve care is really bringing and involving the clinicians to the table early. It should not be a once a month, once a quarter, once a year event where all of a sudden you're putting data in front of the clinicians and either saying, hey, you've done a great job, or here's where you have opportunity. Where things work best in data-driven performance improvement is really having the physicians and the clinicians at the table early on, helping to determine and agree on and commit to these are the metrics that we are going to follow and track. And this is the inclusion and exclusion criteria. Once sort of decided, it's all in. And on the clinician, physician side of things, they have to commit as well once something's agreed on. And again, not letting perfect stop from going forward. Having the physicians help choose the metrics, choose the compare group, making sure that one, we're appropriate, we're using the right risk adjustment and sharing sharing and continuing to have conversations about the data. And the focus of those conversations, again, should be overall in the lens of what's best for the patient and what's best for patient care, and not be used as a stick to penalize or to score or grade clinicians.
So what I'm hearing is actually the importance of engaging clinicians and specifically physicians early on in the process, being consistent with the process with the goal of having a common goal, if you will, and then the importance of a two-way feedback, both from top to bottom, but just as important, if not maybe more important, bottom to the top.
That's exactly right, Tom.
Thanks, David. This ends part one of our discussion. In the next podcast, we'll continue our examination of meaningful data and its impact on medical and clinical practice. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategy. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.